Book number one, Poltergeist of Washington State. Number two, Attachments, Poltergeist of Washington State. And number three, Poltergeist, The Night Side of Physics. Real horror, real fright, and real poltergeists.
The moment of truth, as I call it in book one, was when we saw the plant levitate off the floor.
Keith Linder is back. If you ever wanted to know about poltergeists, don't go anywhere else. I mean, I'm just going to say right now, this isn't about somebody who's kicking the tires and saying, well, this is what I have learned from all of the studies and all of the research and all of the experts on what poltergeists are. All right, we're not going to go there. We're going to go to Keith because Keith has lived it front and center. Keith, you've got a PhD now in poltergeists. I'm so sorry you're stuck doing this, but you are certainly qualified. So thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. Good to talk to you again. I think it was a little bit over a year that we talked last time, but it's good to be here. Hope all is well on your end.
It is. And I want to say thank you. You put a note in the back of the book thanking people who were on board basically from the beginning, and I appreciate the nod. A quick overview of what you experienced that started with book number one and how we get to book number three.
Yeah, so, and it's almost sort of Hollywood-esque, but it's a true story. May 2012, May 1st exactly, me and my girlfriend, Tina at the time, moved into a house suburb of Seattle. And I always tell people this because I think it's important. On day one, we began to experience what we now declare or know as to be poltergeist activity. And I don't mean day one of moving in or first night you sleep in the house. I mean day one of signing the papers. Okay. It was the infamous sitting on the floor, talking about what goes where, how we're going to, you know, put this furniture here and there. And out of the blue, we hear a kid cough. It's plain as day, loud, distinctive. We have no kids, by the way, no pets. The homeowner just left. So it's just me and Tina in an empty house. And we shrugged it off like most people would because we're the only people in the house. Everything is closed. Windows are closed. You know, the brain tells you that had to been or come from outside or it's not what you think it is. So we shrugged it off. Fast forward to a couple of weeks in the home, we started noticing objects missing, my car keys, Tina's jewelry, and we started finding things that neither one of us owned pretty much at the same time. Kid toys, going back to that kid theme again. And these kid toys that we found are displayed openly. I mean, they're almost put in your direct path or a room you just left and return back to. So we thought that was odd, but we didn't think ghosts. We weren't screaming ghosts. We thought we were being pranked, or this is some way of a twisted way of the neighbor saying, welcome to the neighborhood, or a disgruntled previous tenant trying to get back at the landlord and take it out on us. So I put security in and did all that stuff, right? But that did not stop what we now know as activity because things began to escalate. By escalate, I mean loud banging noises, phantom footsteps. You come down, it's a two-story home. You come down in the morning, make a cup of coffee on your way to work, and you see all your kitchen cabinet doors wide open. I mean, every cabinet door wide open, wine rack wide open, drawers wide open. And that was discerning. That was really discerning. But I guess the moment of truth, as I call it in book one, was when we saw the plant levitate off the floor. And by levitate, we're watching a movie, typical weeknight, and a plant next to the entertainment center. Me and Tina are sitting side by side, darts up in the air a few inches and does a 360 degree spin, falls back to the ground. And then we knew. We looked for wires. We looked for a remote control device. We thought it was on some sort of candy camera show, reality show, but of course that wasn't the case. And now we're left with the reality that our house is haunted. That's what we've deduced to because we went to the upstairs, got on Google, and said, how can you tell if your house is haunted? Various websites said the five things we had already experienced are good indicators that you might have something living with you. None of them said it was malevolent. They just said you might have something living with you. We deduced it down to a kid cough or a kid ghost, going back to the kid toys. And that began the snowball effect throughout the months leading up to years of larger objects being thrown, wall writings, spontaneous fires. I mean, fires, but three Bibles caught fire in the home. My two computer monitors caught fire. And these are just fires that flare up. These are not something, you know, you took it in the kitchen and you burnt your, you know, bologna or something.
Fires you're talking about with the monitors, you tried to put them out and they started up again.
Yeah, so it seems to be an intelligent thought in the fire, because we extinguish the fire, and you're right, and the fire reignites the minute your back is turned. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're fighting something invisible. It's like, you're not done yet. And I always tell people the fire, you know, there's all kind of fires, gas fires, electrical fires, whatever. This fire seemed to have, for lack of a better word, a conscious or a true intention, which is, number one, scare the heck out of us. Yeah. Number two, you're not going to be able to extinguish it early. You know, most fires would have been extinguished rather quickly and easily the way we extinguished that one, but not this one, because like I said, you turn your back away from it, and there's a science behind that, and I explain that in book three. The fire reignites, and you're like, whoa, okay, all right, you know. We knew it was Geist-related, because, you know, this is like year two and a half already in the house, but that was new. That fire reigniting 20 seconds after we extinguish it, when our back is turned, let us know, no, we're in a room with you, this is going to go on a little bit longer. So, like I said, domino effect of activity. Yeah, it was just straight up. And after several, you know, them, because we talked before, many paranormal teams came in. Some had luck, some didn't. Most did have luck in finding out that, yeah, the house is active. Steve Mara coming out of the UK, Don Phillips out of the UK, Nikki Novell coming out of Connecticut, lived in a home. And by their determination, or by them living in the home for weeks on a time, were able to substantiate me and Tina's claims that this is a poltergeist house like no other that they've ever seen. And they're right to reach that conclusion.
Well, that's what I want to distinguish here, is there's a difference between somebody who says, we're going to investigate this and we're going to research. And that's what you discovered, was a huge difference between a researcher who sets up on site and 24/7 tries to figure out what's happening.
Full disclosure, I have no prior knowledge of the paranormal at that point in time. I was what you consider a newbie, but I was broken in a rough way by the spirits and by living in the home. I knew you're going to have to be at the house longer than 5 hours, longer than a day, half a day, to get any sort of activity. Keep in mind, we moved in the house 2012, and 2013, we had no activity. That's a whole year. Keep in mind, also in 2012, skip over to 2014, when the activity came back with a vengeance, we would go a couple of days without activity. So there's a baseline, there's a proof of concept already, you know, enacted that says these things can go dormant 48, 72 hours, 2 weeks, a year at the most, and come back harder than before. The team that came in, who only spent 5 hours in the home, seemed to not take that into account, because they were seemed to be disappointed when they didn't get anything. Yeah. Which was a shock to me, because, you know, we were, you know, they interviewed us, we told them everything. I said, hey, sometimes we don't have activity, sometimes it's quiet a few days, a week, but pow, guess what? They come back. And after reading other poltergeist cases, I didn't know this at the time, but I know it now, that's a norm. That's what you call a characteristic within the poltergeist, you know, lore. Mm-hmm. The activity is to go dormant. And they were called flare-ups, flash-ups. The true researcher, like a Steve Merrill or somebody, or Nikki Novell, would know what is causing the flare-up. That's what paranormal investigators get into the field. You know, we're already believers. You know, if you're in that field already, you already believe in the paranormal. You would be in the field. What you're trying to determine is the why. Why is this house haunted? Why is it active? Why is there a bell curve? Why does it go dormant in February but spike in August? What's so special about August? So that's the reason why I was trying to get them to decipher, and they did, and me and Tina called, you know, long story short, we caught hack for that and labeled as hoaxers, pranksters, and tricksters. But other teams, having a more depth of knowledge, understood and was able to hit the ground running, and they started by living in the house. There's a difference between, hey, we're only here for a few hours, it's okay, we set up in your kitchen, and then we're out of here in five, whereas, hey, we're going to live here for a few weeks, it's okay, we set up in your kitchen, and I'm like, yeah. That's your room. Here's the guest bathroom, full access. This house is yours for the duration that you're here. There's a difference between living in a house and visiting a house.
Keith Linder's my guest, and three books now. Bothell Hell House, Poltergeist of Washington State, and book number two, Attachments, the current one, is Poltergeist at Night, Side of Physics. Wendy's Coffee House.
With a poltergeist, you cannot say wave the white flag.
Keith Linder's my guest, Wendy's Coffee House. You're an IT guy, and this is really, I think, the right combination. Like you said, at the beginning, you had no clue. I don't even know if you believed in it to start out with. Having gone through this, 2012, and now we're looking at 2020, you have absolutely been through the ringer trying to figure out why and how this happens. What would you not do going into it from, you know, in retrospect, hindsight? What was the mistake?
That's a good question, and I mentioned it in book two, and I think in book one is also, of what I would not do if I had the chance to do it all over again, is one of the things I made a mistake in while living in the Bothell House, and this goes to the psychology of the poltergeist, because this is their effect on me and Tina. They're constantly beating us down, wearing us down mentally, spiritually, physically, emotionally, and in my sleep deprivation state, it was a rough night. We had a lot of noise, a lot of activity. I might have got 4 hours of sleep at the best, a lot of banging noises. And I got up that morning very angry and upset because I had to be at work. I'm going to sit in traffic for an hour, try to stay awake. And Tina's feeling the same way. And I got up into the hallway of the house, and I just looked up into the, you know, I don't know what I'm looking at, but I'm looking up. And I'm just talking to the air in front of me saying, it's war now. It's a challenge now. When I get home tonight, bring your A game, because I'm going to bring my, I declare war on you guys. And I literally did. Tina's just shaking her head in disbelief because she's frustrated, but she's like, what is this guy doing? He's talking to the air. And I walk into my office and I pull out 5 sheets of blank printer paper and I grab a blue Sharpie and I write on the wall, I'm going to get you. It's war now. You're in my house. And da 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 da. And I made it very extremely personal and derogative, and I taped the notes on every wall of my office and walked out. And when I came home that night, I came in walking with I just went to Best Buy, and I walked in with a box full of remote cameras, you know, Wi-Fi, infrared detection cameras, you know, and spent the entire night setting up the Wi-Fi house monitoring system. And little did I know, I mean, I know now, but little did I know then, That was something that they had wanted. They had wanted that level of engagement, that level of acknowledgement, recognition,
emotion.
Like, oh, you're gonna, yeah. They wanted that level of focus. And I mean, and this, whoever's listening tonight, who may regrettably be going through something similar, and I hope you don't or ever will. You can't turn that faucet off. You cannot control. You know, in a football game, sports game, you can always say timeout. You know, everybody go, you know, replan or re-strategize. Mm-hmm. With a poltergeist, you cannot say wave the white flag. Okay. Hey, I got a little on my head. I was sleep deprived. I'm sorry. I didn't mean what I said. Forgive me. No, I'm newbie. They have no respect for newbies. Okay. when they get done with you, when they're done with you, apologies don't mean nothing. Yeah. No. You've opened that gate. The poltergeist in our house at that day brought their friends after that. and I could tell you the activity, which was already high.
Yeah.
You know, we already had 3 body tests right at that point, went way higher after that. And then I noticed, and I talked about this in my book, the activity stopped being around the house. I mean, me and Tina having dinner and there's activity. No, the activity started happening in whatever room Keith is in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Keith is brushing his teeth.
He's our guy.
Let's throw a plan at him.
Uh-huh.
He's taking a shower. He's leaving for work, you know. And they pivoted. They took me from the house focus to the Keith focus. So, yeah, that was a huge mistake.
This is something that you do want to take note of if you are dealing with somebody who's having poltergeist experience. And it doesn't have to be even a one house is a known. My experience with interviewing you, the last time I was at the station in the studio, and all of a sudden I had to leave. I think I left your phone number at home. Something, there was a reason it was kind of out of character. I go home, the outside water faucet was running full blast. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yay, Keith. Thanks. Today, doing this, I get a phone about, you know, a little automatic message about a tornado. Well, this isn't the right season for a tornado, nor is my area impacted. And it's the first time that's happened. But there's the alarm. And then the kicking my chair. I'm sitting outside doing some prep and the chair gets kicked. I'm like, yeah, I know. Fine. It's Keith's calling card. Okay, so this, and you know, you've talked about having relationships, you know, and women having, I guess, an introduction, intentionally or not. That's a part of this that makes relationships and other kinds of encounters really problematic, because there's no way to really get somebody on board if they don't believe it. And then once they have an experience that frightens them, they're out the door. So how does that work?
The proverb or cliche, seeing is believing, is true. Seeing is really believing. I could tell people, I'm blue in the face or they're blue in the face, what the experience is like, and I try to be very vivid as possible. Some of you are still not going to get it until it happens to you, only in the sense because when I experienced it, you're right, I was not in the paranormal. I was not a disbeliever. I wasn't a believer. I was living my life. I was 50-50. I did not go around saying, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true. I don't have enough information to say that. But I am smart enough to know when something happens and I see it with my own eyes, whoa, that can't be real. That's, you know, objects are not supposed to levitate at will or on their own or traverse through walls or whatnot.
Yeah.
So once we started experiencing that and I started seeing it over and over and over, you know, it changes you. It puts it in a new perspective. You have a new belief on life, on religion, on faith. And it takes a toll on relationships, especially mine. And this is post-Tina. You know, I mean, Tina and I are not together anymore. But those who come in contact with me, even the ones who are nonchalant, like, oh, I have my own ghost problems growing up, too. Yeah, Keith, whatever. You know, because they're like, you're a swell guy. I'm not going to, you know, kick you in your knees while because you have a ghost problem. And I don't try to drill down to them and tell them my ghost problem. I'm like, it's not real. No, that's putting it lightly. I mean, I don't want to look a gift horse in the face and run them from me, but I know their nonchalant might cause one of the spirits that is attached to me to show out a little bit.
Yeah.
And they do. And then I get the phone call of dead in the night, Keith, my dog is going berserkers, or Keith, my doorbell won't stop ringing. I go out to the door and there's nobody there. Keith, I'm getting, you know, all your text messages you sent me earlier today, they're coming back at me a trillion times a second. And all that stuff, and then I get to, hey, it was nice knowing you. I think you're a swell guy, but I'm going to have to, you know, part ways with you. And I understand. I totally understand it from their angle because, like I said, seeing is believing. And nobody in their rightful mind would purposely sign up for this, you know.
Yeah, okay, we're talking heartbeats in the bed, you know, because that's one thing that you have. It's a normal for you. That would be a little bit disconcerting.
Exactly.
The thing with this third book, this is the current book, The Night Side of Physics, Poltergeist. What are we going to get from this one?
Yeah, so Poltergeist, The Night Side of Physics, unlike the previous two, it's not a nonfiction book. It does have, because I couldn't do it without it, me reiterating what I lived through while in the home. But this book is more technical in the sense of I'm combining, and I did a lot of research, of what's currently known in the quantum and physics realm with science. You know, what are some of the things out there in quantum physics, you know, atoms, teleportation, and whatnot. And what did I see and witness with the poltergeist in the house? What did me and Tina witness and see? And both two sides of the same coin, almost, you can almost say the resemblance is almost identical. What physics says can happen in the quantum scale, meaning things we can't see with our naked eye, things that are just vanishingly small, almost undetected to the human eye, but physics and scientists say does happen. We saw on the macro scale, we saw couches levitate. We saw objects disappear, reappear in thin air. You already talked about the heartbeats, the phantom noises, the sounds, the speed in which objects travel in the home. It seems that things happen the minute your back is turned. Science has a name for some of that stuff. Not saying that the science explains that. No, I'm not saying that science explains that activity. I'm saying the poltergeist, the entity, the spirit, have abilities that match or far exceed our understanding of physics. The poltergeist, we always talk about spirits, entities. In my book, I break it down to, we're just basically talking about energy. Quantum physics or physics in general says, energy cannot be destroyed. It just can only change form. So therefore, a poltergeist, in my opinion, is an energy, an intelligent one.
And we've got to take a quick break. Poltergeist, The Night Side of Physics. The third book is about problem solving. Wendy's Coffee House.
Quantum physics, or physics in general, says energy cannot be destroyed. It just can only change form.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. The first book was a discovery. Poltergeists are real. The second book, poltergeists don't necessarily stay in one spot. The third book, Can We Explain Poltergeists? Keith Linder.
This book right there is going to marry the paranormal with the physics field. And it's going to go through one by one, maybe the top 10 activities that happened in the home. You know, the burning Bible. One thing about poltergeist activity, not just my own, but a percentage of poltergeist activity involve spontaneous fire. There's reports of fire breaking out. Quantum physics talks about what is called as black body radiation. Black body radiation comes out of the quantum arena that says a black body which emits no visible radiation. You can't see a black body with the naked eye. And just for those who understand, I'll give you an example. What is a black body? A black body is your electrical range in your home. When you turn it on, it never gets red or whatever. You turn it on high, you know it's on because you put an item on top of it and the water starts boiling. If you put on infrared goggles, however, you would see with infrared goggles, because that's a different spectrum, we see in a limited spectrum, you would see that range glaring red, okay? Now, if somebody was to channel that glaring red, say condense it to, you know, a ray and focus it on another object, I can heat an object next to you, Wendy, and as long as I maintain it in the infrared spectrum, you wouldn't see it until the fire burst out.
Understood.
You know? Because it gets hotter and hotter and hotter as the degree escalates. Well, so that's one example included in the book, because we had a lot of fires in the home.
Yeah.
And a lot of times fires erupt when you're standing right next to the item, but you don't see the buildup. You just see the effect.
You have a drawing, and this is about, it's an ant on a string. Can you explain, because this is a visual you've provided, but I think it's really brilliant.
Yeah, so this is an analogy or a metaphor of, when we talk about multiple dimensions, you know, it's hard for the human mind to comprehend more dimensions than the three we live in. It's really hard for us to think in those terms. And that's just how our brain has been wired over time. When we say, you know, I can go forward, backwards, up, and down. That's our dimension that we live in, right?
Yeah.
And to think further than that is really hard for the brain to do. If I told you to go all the above, when to go all the above at one time, you'd be like, what? What are you talking about?
Mm.
Okay, so when you get outside the fourth dimension time, you start talking about fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10, 11 dimensions, then you have to start thinking about, okay, that gives you more maneuverability.
Yeah.
You can maneuver in ways just astronomical. So when I found that image and I put it in the book, I want people to understand, okay, because everybody can understand this analogy of, get a tightrope, you know, imagine yourself trying to walk across it, and you realize the minute you're on it, you can only go forwards and backwards. That's all you can go.
Yeah.
You can't go underneath the rope. You only go forwards and back. Nothing has changed about your environment. Dimensions are still the same. Why all of a sudden are you restricted? What has happened? Well, here comes a little old mosey little ant, you know, falling on the same rope that you're on, living in the same universe that you're in, obviously. And it's able to maneuver around you. It gets to your foot or your shoe or whatever. It's like, the path is blocked. What's this guy doing? And it can go underneath the rope and crawl off to the other side. It's not done anything supernatural. Only thing it's done is it has a better navigation, if you will, of the current dimensions that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called pacification, meaning based on its dynamic makeup and based on our dynamic makeup, including how we think, we're limited. The ant is not. The ant is not defying the laws of gravity by walking underneath the rope to bypass your shoe. No. It's just not constrained like you are. What I'm trying to tell the people, and I believe this because I've seen them, whenever I would get a glimpse of the shadowy figures in our home, and this happened a lot, when they presented themselves in front of me, sometimes how they walked and the manner in which they walked, they would walk in and out of frame. Okay?
Yeah.
They would be walking towards me, and it's going to sound weird when I say this, they'd be walking towards me, but also it looked like they're walking away from me at the same time. Weirdest thing ever.
Yeah.
And what multiple dimensions tells us is that shadowy figure is walking towards you. And the only reason why it's not, it looks like to you like it's walking away from you at the same time is because you're missing the other dimensions that it's currently occupying to get to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I said, and it's very weird in my first book, I would tell people, you know, we were sleeping in our master bedroom sometimes because the noise would be so loud and we would move to a guest bedroom. And it took like 2 to 3 days for the spirits to finally find us. and that was the weirdest thing ever for me. Like, we're just over here.
Uh-huh.
You know, we hear all this rustling in the room, and it's the way they navigate through their world to get back into ours. That's what the ad photo in that chapter was about.
Paranormal researchers have all these toys and gadgets and little, you know, contraptions that are supposed to pick up on paranormal information. I like the way you say it's reading the environment. It's not reading the paranormal. And that's the problem, I think, that everybody is jumping to conclusions that somehow these gadgets are going to tell us more. And right now we're still limited because we're relying on the gadget to do all the work.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hard, and it's not hard coming from an IT person, but as humans, we're accustomed to technology, right? We're accustomed to the little gadgets that we buy, you see on a website, you know, it's a ghost box, it's a ghost device. No, it's not. There's no such thing as a ghost box. There's no such thing as a ghost detection device. What you need is a device, a scientific device, that can come into a house environment that suspected activity to come in and pull out the atmospheric anomalies taking place in the home. There are devices out there that are not made for the paranormal, but trust me, are beneficial to the paranormal that the paranormal is not utilized. One of the things I tell people in my home was the footsteps, constant pitter patter, running, tapping, the rapping noises. Well, there are devices out there that you can bring into your home, modestly, not crazy expensive, but modestly expensive, to where it can pick up a pin drop that was dropped on the floor 500 yards away. Mm-hmm. These are seismic devices that if you sit them in your house, and I've ordered one, it hasn't arrived, it can pick up earthquakes halfway around the world and tell you what country that earthquake or that tremor was, because there's a sound we're all used to, what our ears pick up. Well, that's not even 99% of the sound is out there. There's an infrasound and an ultrasound that our ears can't hear. So the spirits are making noises all around us. You know, they're over in this room and we're over in this room. And we're going by the devices, you know, that we downloaded off iPhone and off Google and off Droid. And we're thinking it's going to tell us where the ghosts are. No, we need to catch the anomaly, because everything that occupies space affects the atmosphere that it's in. Sound waves are just, you know, wind bouncing off each other. It's just sound. So if you have a room that's been known to be active and you got some sort of atmospheric device with you set up, you're looking for the anomaly. The anomaly is going to lead you to the truth of, this is weird, can't explain that. I take this back to colleagues, scientists, whoever, say, why is this room showing this type of anomaly? And they're like scratching their head. Well, that's weird. I can't explain that either.
Yeah.
That's what you want. You're never going to track down Casper and catch him and, you know, with his hand in the cookie jar, but you can capture the anomaly. You can capture something that the equipment itself is going to solve. I can tell you, when I did the heartbeat experiment with my second book, and I did the digital stethoscope that were 1,000 times sound sensitive and captured the heartbeats in my bed mattress, I thought, man, this was a trip to nowhere. But the equipment did all the work. It's like, this equipment was made to detect heartbeats. Why wouldn't we catch it? If there's a heartbeat there, we're going to capture it. It has nothing to do with you, Keith. You didn't download anything. And then the equipment picked up the heartbeat and did the arrhythmic rhythm and all that. I took the arrhythmic rhythm to nurses, doctors, and medical people and said, define that. What is that? And they're like, that's a tripped out heartbeat. That's not human. That's we don't know what that is. Yeah. And that's evidence that you want.
So you've come a long way from that first book. You're getting calls from people who want your advice on how to deal with poltergeists. Back in a few, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest is Keith Linder.
Nobody deserves a poltergeist harassing them. And if I could tell them what not to do, that's going to help them a lot, because poltergeists do not suffer fools. They don't feel sorry for you for your mistakes you made. They don't give you a book and say, this is how to deal with us. No, they don't do that.
This says just how far you've come, because at the beginning, you're a novice. You're completely clueless and really in over your head. By this book number three, you get a message, a call for help from a church, and they have a case, they say, that's really very, very much like yours, and they don't know what to do, and they're calling you. Where before, a lot of these people wouldn't give you the time of day because you were just, you know, off the wall, off the deep end. They don't want anything to do with you. And here it is now. They're calling you for help. That's tremendous. It also says that you have lived through working on the front lines, backwards and forwards, figuring out how this works and how to some way, shape, or form mitigate it. That has to be, at least for you, an indication that what you're doing is paying off.
Interesting enough, it was the same church that I reached out to years prior when me and Tina had activity. And I kid you not, the lady, when I was speaking to her, said, hey, I remember you. You're that ghost guy in Bothell and Ghost of Bridges this and all that stuff. And, hey, man, we got this case up here in North Washington that we're at our wits end. And for them to tell me that, I understood what they're at their wits end meant, because they were at their wits end with us. And I said, we got this family up north, and, you know, we would like for you to chime in and talk to them. Yeah, and I did. You know, I talked to the family, and it was a crazy case, you know, crazy. Yeah. I was glad that, you know, they thought of me. She said, I have your old phone number. I didn't know if it still existed, but it was almost like a Hail Mary pass on their part. That's what I do now. I get emails from people all over the world, mainly people who've experienced something similar or worse. I'm working with a few paranormal teams out of the UK, a few in California, almost as a consultant.
Yeah.
If I can serve as a role of what not to do, that's going to go a long way. And they like that. They everybody, after combing through the evidence, after reading both books, after talking to me, everybody's starting to realize, and this is not, you know, braggadocio thing, because we're all after the truth. Everybody's saying some of these theories that we thought might have been the case might have to be revisited. And that's fine. That's all discovery, and that's how you want the evidence to guide you, not worldview or anything. And they're like, we're seeing things at your house that just rewrite what poltergeist is, and that's fine. I didn't rewrite it. Poltergeist did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they look at me like, you know, how did you, you know, what not to do, what to do, and it helps. When I talk to people, a family, a husband, a wife, a child, they're like me and Tina. They're crying. They're distraught. They're within. They didn't ask for this. Nobody asked for this stuff. They're in a stage of their lives. You know, nobody's perfect. We all have faults and whatnot, but nobody deserves a poltergeist harassing them. And they just want me to stop. And if I could tell them what not to do, that's going to help them a lot, because some of them, I want them to avoid making the mistakes that we made. And you make the mistakes not because you want to, it's because you don't know what else to do. So you're going to make mistakes, and the poltergeist do not suffer fools. They take no, they don't feel sorry for you for your mistakes you made. They don't give you a book and say, this is how to deal with us. No, they don't do that.
When I had an experience, oh, maybe it's been 20 years ago, the people were having a tremendous activity. And the deal is they were advised by somebody else to go put crosses on the walls. Okay, this is a family that may or may not be religious. So they're putting crosses on the walls. And the result was the crosses kept flying and coming off the walls. And it had to do with the fact, if you don't believe in the cross, then sure as heck, right, don't use it as a tool, because the poltergeist basically calls you on your BS and says, ha ha, and then you might be frightened. Yeah, yeah, it's like, no. You don't go in and use somebody else's ammo. So the stuff that you're doing that you have lived through, your IT background, Keith, this really gave you an edge dealing with this to be able to look at it from a different angle.
Well, the IT background is what made me document everything. And I tell you, anybody who's going through something like this, trust me, there are rewards in documenting everything. Leave nothing undocumented. Time, date occurred, weather condition, day of the week. When was the last time it was active, inactive, what room, you know, upstairs, downstairs, guest bedroom, master bedroom. All that stuff might not be important, but it comes into play later. And I've noticed it gains you credibility with the right team that comes in. And everybody who's come in my home knows, and they tell me, they marvel at the amount of documentation. But that's my IT background. This stuff that me and Tina are seeing happening around us seems so important, and that's my thinking was that it should be documented. And I mean extensively, because I don't know what it is. I can't make heads or tails of it, but I have to think somebody out there would. And a lot of teams who are worth their salt were able to hit the ground running versus reinventing the wheel once they walked in. Hanging crosses on every wall in a home and saying, this is going to clear it out and enough. Run from people like that. You know, they've invested much time in TV and television, and they're making it up as they go. No. It takes a while to know you, the person, to know what your beliefs are, to where that's even going to have an effect on the spirit. That's just cliche, you know, level one, what not to do with a home.
Yeah.
Want to put crosses everywhere.
For people who are in some way, shape, or form being antagonized, are you advocating that they can call you and contact you? Is that something that you're willing to do?
Yes, people can call me. You can email me. It might surprise people. You put your email address in your book. Yeah, why wouldn't I? I put my email address in my book because I want people to find me and call me. If I can help offer insight, be of service, you know, long story short, I could tell anybody, when dealing with these spirits, less is more. You know, go in with a mindset of less is more. Don't come in there trying to, you know, break up the whole environment. Don't break TNT in there and a cart full of Bibles and all that. No. Less is more. We got to take the logs off the fire from a mental, spiritual standpoint and find out what created the activity. Why is it escalating? Why is it attached to you running around? And I learn from people. There are things I've learned from talking to people. So I want to know. So yeah, people can call me and write me, and we'll go through this thing together. I'm never going to give you, I'm going to say bad advice. If I don't know something, I will tell you, I don't know. And that's a good answer. That's a good answer, because I don't want to lead you down a wrong path, because that's only going to get you in more trouble. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Do you have a game plan the next, you know, you've got three books on this. What's the next for you project?
Get the third book. I mean, like I said, I'm getting the third book off the ground. My project moving forward is to continue on the consulting, to talk to people via email, via Zoom meeting. I got some things in the works of trying to get my own podcast that where people can, you know, call in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want to talk about poltergeist specifically. There's some equipment being shipped to me that we're going to test some of these theories about the radio waves and whatnot. So there's a lot of things in the works. And like I said, I share with the community once I have it vetted. But that's where I'm at. Just basically just being a consultant, talking and doing things like that.
The Amazon reviews on these are outstanding. So Bothell Hill House, start with that. That's The Poltergeist of Washington State, number one, tells about the story, how everything got started, and Keith is trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Attachments, book number two, Poltergeist of Washington State, part two. Current book, Poltergeist, The Night Side of Physics, which gets into everything that Keith learned through this process. And there's a lot of stuff now that suggests what has been known and what has been accepted as common knowledge that needs a bit of a rewrite. That's why Keith is doing what he's doing. I'll include links in the show notes and on the Wendy's Coffeehouse website. Thanks for listening.